Hello, and welcome to the African American Hour. I'm Rosemary Onkwe, bringing you readings from the following publications: Blavity, Black News, The Voice, Ebony, Associated Press, and News One. First, an article from Blavity from March 2025 titled Spelman College Pageants Go Viral on TikTok, written by Kyra Alessandrini, Kyra Alessandrini. Blavity, March 31st, 2025. HBCU culture is getting some recognition online as videos of the spring pageants at Spelman College are going viral on TikTok. Miss Spelman College pageant contestants are sharing clips online until a winner is announced on April 14th, according to Black Enterprise. Pageants are an important part of HBCU culture. Several competitions are currently ongoing at Spelman. They include the Miss Black and Gold and Miss Afro-Latinidad pageants, as well as the Miss Spelman College contest. Miss Spelman College serves foremost as an ambassador to Spelman College. She may be asked to represent the college to prospective students and parents, as well as to donors and external constituents, Spelman College indicated on its website. She should carry herself in a manner that would enhance the image of the college. The institution added that Miss Spelman College would embody the HBCU's ideals of academic excellence, ethical leadership, appreciation of the many cultures of the world, as well as commitment to positive social change. Your search for the queen is officially done. Contestant number 4, Aziyah, A-Z-I-Y-A-H, a junior political science major, said in a video posted on TikTok, "Because, like my institution, I come second to none." The video of her introduction has garnered 4.6 million views so far. Other introductions and clips of the event have also racked up millions of views. Slow and steady. That's how queens are made, Madison, an English major, said during her introduction. "So I've been patiently waiting, but finally it's my moment. Oh, and trust me, I'm about to own it." Pageants are an integral part of HBCU culture and well-known within the community. On TikTok, clips have been viewed by Black communities outside of the United States and are being introduced to HBCU culture for the very first time. Do I go to Spelman? No. Have I been tuned into every video? Yes. Do I regret not even attending an HBCU? Yes. Please post the pageant, wrote someone under an introduction video. "I am Jamaican in Jamaica, have no business in Spelman's business, but I watch every single one that pops up and shout rep, rep, rep," wrote another person. Spelman's college pageants are also being introduced to people who are unfamiliar with HBCU culture. "As a middle-aged white woman, I have no idea how I stumbled upon the Miss Spelman pageant side of TikTok, but I'm living for all this Black girl magic," someone commented under a video. Here were the winners from Spelman. Miss Spelman 2025, Miss Taylor Mills, M-I-L-L-S. First attendant, Chelsea Benton. Second attendant, Aziyah Harps, H-A-R-P-S. This article was titled, Spelman College Pageants Go Viral on TikTok, written by Kyra Alessandrini, Blavity, March 31st, 2025. Next, an article from News One titled The Birth of the Black Dandy, How 250 Years of Black Fashion Inspired the 2025 Met Gala, written by Toby Slade, S-L-A-D-E, University of Sydney, and Dijani Mulhern, and Dijana Mulhern, D-I-J-A-N-N-A, M-U-L-H-E-R-N, University of Technology, Sydney, May 5th, 2025. Fashion is one of the most powerful tools we have for understanding ourselves and the world around us. Nowhere is this clearer than in the story of Black American tailoring and the legacy of the Black Dandy. Inspired by scholar Monica L. Miller's groundbreaking book, Slaves to Fashion, Black Dandyism, and the Styling of Black Diasporic Identity, the theme of the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute Spring 2025 show is Superfine, Tailoring Black Style. The exhibition charts the evolution of the Black Dandy from the 18th century to today. The story it tells is more than just suits. It's about power, pride, resistance, and joy. Each year, the Met Gala takes its dress code from the Institute's spring exhibition. This year is tailored for you. So who is the Black Dandy? And why are they so important to fashion today? And what can we expect to see on the red carpet? Black Dandy is a modern term. Figures like American abolitionist Frederick Douglass, 1818 to 95, or Haitian revolutionary leader Toussaint Louverture, 1743 to 1803, would not have called themselves dandies, but they used style with similar effect as a tool of resistance, self-fashioning, and cultural pride. French poet Charles Baudelaire, 1821 to 67, first wrote about dandies in 1863, describing them as individuals who elevate style to a form of personal and aesthetic resistance. Baudelaire's dandy was not just stylish, but symbolic. He was an emblem of modernity itself, a time marked by fluid identities, liminal spaces, and the collapse of clear boundaries between gender, authenticity, and social order. Dandyism among Black men took root in the 18th and 19th centuries in both the United States and the Caribbean. Tailoring became a way to reclaim dignity under enslavement and colonialism. Dandies take the clothing of an oppressor, aristocratic, colonial, segregationist, or otherwise, and turn it into a weapon of elegance. Through meticulous style and refinement, dandies make a silent yet striking claim to moral superiority. Douglass famously appeared in immaculate Victorian suits when campaigning for abolition, consciously dressing in the same styles as those who denied his freedom. Louverture used perfectly tailored French military uniforms during the Haitian Revolution against French colonial rule. In the 1920s, Harlem dandies wore fine tailoring and flamboyant colors, rejecting the idea that poverty or discrimination should dictate presentation. In perfectly tied cravats, polished shoes, and sharply tailored coats, Black dandies refashioned power on their own terms. Dandies also challenged the narrow rules of masculinity. Conventional menswear often demands restraint, toughness, and invisibility. Dandies dare to embrace beauty, self-adornment, and performance. This masculinity can be expressive, creative, and even flamboyant. The luxurious silk suits and carefully groomed appearance of American jazz pioneer Duke Ellington, 1899 to 1974, projected glamour rather than austerity. The elegantly tailored overcoats and scarves of American poet Langston Hughes, 1901 to 67, suggested a masculinity deeply entwined with creativity and softness. Figures in Harlem's ballrooms and jazz clubs blurred gender boundaries decades before mainstream conversations about gender fluidity emerged. In a world where Black self-presentation has long been scrutinized and politicized, tailored clothing asserted visibility, authority, and artistry. Dandies transformed fashion into a political declaration of dignity, resistance, and creative power. Black American tailoring practices blossomed most visibly in the zoot suits of the Harlem Renaissance, though they had strong roots in New Orleans, Chicago, and the Caribbean. As seen in the Sunday Best of the Civil Rights Era, black tailoring walked the line between resistance and celebration, beautiful but with clear political intent. In the 1970s, the black dandy became more flamboyant, wearing tight, colorful clothes with bold accessories. He transformed traditional suits with exaggerated shapes, bright patterns, and plaids inspired by African heritage. Artists popular with a white audience like Sammy Davis Jr., 1925 to 90, Miles Davis, 1926 to 91, and James Brown, 1933 to 2006, embraced the aesthetic, contributing to its widespread acceptance. Meanwhile, a super stylish contingent of black men in the Congo, La Sapeur, S-A-P-E-U-R, refined their looks so spectacularly they would become the benchmark of black dandy for generations to come. 1990 saw a new era of black dandyism emerge through luxury, sportswear, and hip-hop aesthetics. Designer Dapper Dan, 1944 to present, revolutionized fashion by remixing luxury logos into bold custom streetwear, creating a distinctive black aesthetic that bridged hip-hop culture and high fashion. Musician Andre 3000, 1975 to present, redefined menswear by blending southern black style with bold color, vintage tailoring, and theatrical flair. Today, the tradition thrives in the style of influencer Wisdom Kaye, K-A-Y-E, the elegance of LeBron James, and the risk-taking of Lewis Hamilton. Tailored for You invites guests to interpret the dandy legacy in personal, bold, and boundary-pushing ways. Whether conforming to tradition, subverting expectations, or creating something entirely new, this theme is a celebration of the freedom to dress and to be on your own terms. The black dandy is a figure of defiance and desire, of ambiguity and brilliance, of resistance and beauty. Dandyism blurs boundaries between masculinity and femininity, artifice, authenticity, conformity, and rebellion. It unsettles fixed identities and reflects border tensions within modern style. Black dandies have shocked, amused, offended, delighted, and inspired society since their inception. In the sharp defiance of Douglas's Victorian suits, the flamboyant spectacle of Harlem ballrooms, and the logo-laced rebellion of Dapper Dan's streetwear, the black dandy has continually forced the world to reckon with the politics of presence, pride, and performance. Despite being overlooked by mainstream fashion history, they've shaped the way we see elegance, masculinity, and self-expression. This Met Gala and the accompanying exhibition are not just a celebration, they are a long overdue recognition. This article was titled, The Birth of the Black Dandy, How 250 Years of Black Fashion Inspired the 2025 Met Gala, written by Toby Slade, University of Technology, Sydney, and Diagana Mulhern, University of Technology, Sydney, News 1, May 5, 2025. Next, an article from blacknews.com titled, Brianna Pregnant Again, She and ASAP Rocky Expecting Third Baby as Family Grows, Monday, May 5, 2025, nationwide. Rihanna and ASAP Rocky are preparing to welcome their third child together, and the big reveal in an iconic fashion on the blue carpet at the 2025 Met Gala in New York City. The global superstar proudly showcased her baby bump, confirming what many fans had suspected as she posed for cameras in a flowing ensemble that highlighted her growing belly. the couple, who have been romantically linked since 2020, already share two sons and have become known for keeping much of their family life private, while still sharing special milestones with fans. Their first child, Riza, R-Z-A, Athelstan Mayers, was born on May 13, 2022, and named after the legendary Wu-Tang Clan leader, Riza, R-Z-A. Rihanna and Rocky kept Riza's name under wraps for nearly a year, revealing it in 2023. Rihanna's second pregnancy was famously announced on the world stage during her electrifying Super Bowl halftime show in February 2023. Dressed in a red jumpsuit, the singer stunned fans by cradling her stomach mid-performance, later confirming the pregnancy after the show. Their second son, Riot Rose Mayers, was born on August 3, 2023. The unique name was inspired by Rocky's track Riot, produced with Pharrell Williams, who also suggested the name. Now, TMZ reports that the music and fashion power couple are adding another little one to the mix, making Riza and Riot proud big brothers. The exact due date hasn't been shared publicly, and Rihanna's team has yet to comment, but her radiant appearance at the Met Gala said it all. From the secret name reveals to surprise performances, Rihanna and Rocky continue to captivate fans with their love story and growing family. Congratulations to the couple on their exciting news. This article was titled, Rihanna Pregnant Again, She and ASAP Rocky Expecting Third Baby as Family Grows, by blacknews.com, May 5th, 2025. Next, an article from The Voice titled, Focus on Health Span versus Lifespan, written by Voice Health News, April 30th, 2025. Modern medicine has increased life expectancy. Over the past 100 years, the global life expectancy has more than doubled. But this has not necessarily been accompanied by an equivalent increase in healthy life expectancy. People are living longer, but many of those years are burdened by chronic diseases, such as heart disease, diabetes, and even cancer. This is where it's important to understand the difference between lifespan and health span. Lifespan is the total number of years we live, whereas health span is how many of those years we remain healthy and free from disease. Genes are only 20% of the picture. Well, it turns out only about 20% of how long we live is dictated by our genes, whereas the other 80% is dictated by our lifestyles. This means we have incredible power and control over our health in preventing chronic diseases and increasing our longevity. Americans on average can expect to live to about age 76, but their health will start to decline much earlier than that, around age 64. Lengthening health spans. There are currently two main ways experts think we may be able to extend our health spans. The first is by adopting everyday healthy behaviors we already know we should be engaging in: exercising regularly, eating nutritious food, getting good sleep, and investing in our social bonds. The second is using more experimental approaches that target cellular processes involved in aging through drugs, genetic manipulations, or extreme diets. These innovative anti-aging interventions have been shown to lengthen the lives of worms and mice, but it would take decades and billions of dollars to determine whether they can help humans live longer too. So instead, researchers are beginning to test a few of them in people to see if they can prolong health spans. The hope is that the drugs and other interventions will slow down how fast someone is aging, which in turn could delay the onset of disease. Health span and lifespan are intrinsically linked. So if people live healthier for longer, they are also likely to live longer, period. Healthspan and lifespan are intrinsically linked. So if people live healthier for longer, they are also likely to live longer, period. Studies of centenarians have found that 42% did not experience an age-related chronic disease before the age of 80. In Japan and Singapore, the two countries with the highest life expectancy, on average about 84, people's health starts to decline around age 73. It will take years before the research can tell us whether it's possible to reliably and safely slow down the aging process using experimental approaches. But we can all start adopting some of the lifestyle changes to try to extend our own personal health spans now. This article was titled Focus on Healthy Span versus Lifespan by Voice Health News, April 30th, 2025. Next, an article from blacknews.com titled Underprivileged Youth Set for Life-Changing Trip to Africa After Winning Black History Month Essay Contest. Friday, May 2nd, 2025. The Kids Free Trip to Africa program, KFTTA, founded by Paul Allen Billings, B-I-L-L-I-N-G-S, of WUVS 103.7, The Beat, is making dreams come true for seven exceptional students from low-income communities in Muskegon, Michigan, M-U-S-K-E-G-O-N. These bright young minds, all first-generation international travelers in their families, have been selected for an awe-inspiring expedition to Ghana and Egypt after winning a Black History Month essay contest sponsored by the radio station. This year's ambassadors include Chantel Bream Bozeman, B-R-E-A-N-B-O-S-E-M-A-N, from Muskegon Covenant Academy, Asia Fletcher, Lawrence Pascal, P-A-S-K-E-L, and Tamaya White from Muskegon Heights High School, and Kimora Stedman, S-T-E-D-M-A-N, Kayvante Taylor, and Isis Carter from Muskegon High School. Our mission is to break down barriers and open doors for these deserving kids, said Paul Allen Billings, founder of KFTTA and WUVS 103.7, The Beat. The essay contest not only showcased their understanding of Black history, but also their potential as future leaders. Many of these students who have never left the Midwest, let alone the country. The journey will not only broaden their horizons, but also inspire them to dream bigger and reach higher. The itinerary promises a rich cultural experience across West and North Africa. In Ghana, students will visit historical sites like the Elmina Slave Castle and the W.E.B. Du Bois Center in Accra. New to this year's program is Egypt, where they'll marvel at the pyramids of Giza, encounter the enigmatic Sphinx, and experience the bustling markets of Cairo. The journey will also take them to the ancient city of Luxor, L-U-X-O-R, where they'll explore the awe-inspiring Valley of the Kings, home to the tombs of pharaohs, including Tutankhamun, T-U-T-A-N-K-H-A-M-U-N, and witness the grandeur of Luxor Temple and Karnak, K-A-R-N-A-K, Temple Complex. Since its inception in 2017, the KFTTA program has sent over 40 high school students from Michigan and Florida to Africa, all free of charge. This remarkable achievement underscores the program's commitment to creating life-changing opportunities for underprivileged youth. While the program has received early local support from Corliss Watkins Nass and Robert Nass and the Community Foundation of Muskegon, KFTTA is now calling on the wider community to help make this life-changing opportunity a reality for these deserving students. Every donation, no matter the size, brings these kids one step closer to an experience that will shape their future, Billings added. We're not just sending them on a trip. We're investing in the next generation of leaders, thinkers, and global citizens. The kids leave for Africa the last week of June. Donations can be made through the program's GoFundMe page at gofundme.com/f/2025-kids-free-trip-2-Africa. This article was titled Underprivileged Youth Set for Life-Changing Trip to Africa After Winning Black History Month Essay Contest. From blacknews.com, Friday, May 2nd, 2025. Next, an article from Blavity titled, 6 888 Members Honored with Congressional Gold Medal, written by Aria Bell, May 5th, 2025. The Armed Forces women, recognized as the 6 888, were honored with the Congressional Gold Medal for their groundbreaking work during World War II on Tuesday. In 1945, the 6,888th Central Postal Directory Battalion, led by Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams Early, E-A-R-L-E-Y, was the sole all-black women's military unit deployed to Europe during World War II. This extraordinary collective created an operations process that solved the severe postal disruption in Europe during the battle. In only 3 months, they cleared 17 million pieces of mail, finishing the job at twice the speed projected initially. Their innovative locator card system ensured service members received their correspondence without delay. Last December, the Tyler Perry written and directed film, The 6888, was released on Netflix, bringing more awareness to the women's impact and historical contribution to the armed forces. 2 years before the movie, the U.S. Congress voted 422-0 to present the 6,888th with the most distinguished recognition, the Congressional Gold Medal, ABC News reports. Wisconsin Representative Gwen Moore, who co-sponsored the bill, emphasized the importance of finally honoring the courageous women of the 6,088th. These heroes deserve their dues, and I'm so glad their story is being told, Moore, a Democrat, told the Associated Press on April 28th. I am especially honored to ensure my constituent, Miss Anna Mae Robertson, and the many others who served with her are recognized for their selfless service. Inactive Major Fanny McGriffin McClendon, MCCLENDON, admitted she couldn't believe the voting results. It's overwhelming, she added. It's something I never even thought about. Following the military integration, McClendon joined the Air Force and blazed a trail, becoming the first woman to command an all-male squadron under the Strategic Air Command before retiring in 1971. They kept hollering about wanting us to go overseas, so I guess they found something for us to do overseas, take care of the mail, McClendon said. And there was an awful lot of mail. They expected we were going to be there about 2 or 3 months, trying to get it straightened out. Well, I think in about a month and a half, we had it all straightened out and going in the right direction. Kim Geise, G-U-I-S-E, of the National World War II Museum, noted that just two women from the original 855-member unit are still alive today. That shows how long this recognition took, she told ABC News, about the unit officially being recognized. It is really important to recognize the accomplishments of these women and what they went through to serve their country in wartime. House Speaker Mike Johnson joined others in a commemorative event at Emancipation Hall at the Capitol Visitor Center to celebrate Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams Early's legacy by presenting her family with the honorary medal. This article was titled, 6 888 Members Honored with Congressional Gold Medal by Aria Bell, Blavity, May 5th, 2025. Next, another article from Blavity, titled, Erin DeNiro, A-I-R-Y-N, daughter of Robert DeNiro, comes out as a trans woman, written by Kyra Alessandrini, K-Y-R-A-A-L-E-S-S-A-N-D-R-I-N-I, May 5th, 2025. The 29-year-old daughter of actor Robert De Niro has come out as transgender in a new interview. Erin opened up after tabloids shared the news before she could. She reflected on her upbringing outside of the limelight, as well as the inspiration she hopes to provide to others by sharing her experience as a trans woman. On May 19th, Erin was photographed by paparazzi with long pink locks, and tabloids announced her identity as a trans woman. The 29-year-old was not in control of how the news broke, and even noticed inconsistencies in the information the Daily Mail and other outlets were sharing. They sort of reminded me that people really don't know anything about me, she told them. There's a difference between being visible and being seen, Erin added. I've been visible. I don't think I've been seen yet. She sees herself as a late bloomer and often felt different than her peers growing up. Erin said she felt like she stood up like a sore thumb because she was a bigger-bodied person in a relatively thin or fit family. Although her parents were accepting of her queerness, social beauty standards still had affected her. I was always told I was too much of something or not enough of something growing up. Too big, not skinny enough, not black enough, not white enough. Too feminine, not masculine enough, Erin said. It was never just, you're just right the way you are. Obviously, no parent is perfect, but I'm grateful that both my parents agreed to keep me out of the limelight, Erin added. They have told me they wanted me to have as much of a normal childhood as possible. She started hormone therapy in November 2024, and she said she found inspiration in black women like Laverne Cox and Raven Simone. I'd want to hopefully be an inspiration for at least one person like me who was black, who was queer, who is not a size extra small, she said. I'd want to see more trans women, more black women, who are maybe bigger bodied or don't fit the mold of super thin or heroin chic. Erin's studies as a mental health counselor are a testimony to her dedication and commitment to advocacy. People of color and queer people definitely need more mental health advocacy and support, she said. So I'm hoping I'm able to do that. Erin is one of De Niro's 7 children. He shares Erin and her twin brother Julian with actress Tuki Smith, T-O-U-K-I-E. This article was titled, Erin DeNiro, daughter of Robert DeNiro, comes out as a trans woman, written by Kyra Alessandrini, Blavity, May 5th, 2025. The next article is from The Griot and is titled, Come Home, Ghana Told African Diaspora. Now some black Americans take its citizenship. written by the Associated Press, The Griot, January 4th, 2025, Accra, Ghana. Flipping through a family album. Keachia Bowers, K-E-A-C-H-I-A, paused on a photo of her as a baby on her father's lap, as he held the 1978 album, Africa Stand Alone, by the Jamaican reggae band Culture. When I was 10 years old, I was supposed to come to Ghana with him, she said. A day earlier, she had marked 10 years since her father's death. Though he was a Pan-Africanist who dreamed of visiting Ghana, he never made it here. Bowers and her husband, Damon Smith, however, are among the 524 diaspora members, mostly black Americans, who were granted Ghanaian citizenship in a ceremony in November. Bowers and Smith moved to Ghana from Florida in 2023 after visiting the region several times between them since the 90s. They now run a tour business that caters to black people who want to visit Ghana or elsewhere in West Africa, or, like them, have come to consider a permanent move. The November group was the largest one granted citizenship since Ghana launched the Year of the Return program, aimed at attracting the black diaspora in 2019. It marked 400 years since the first African slaves arrived in Virginia in 1619. Ghana's Tourism Authority and Office of Diaspora Affairs have extended the program into Beyond the Return, which fosters the relationship with diasporans. Hundreds have been granted citizenship, including people from Canada, the UK, and Jamaica. Bauer said moving to Ghana gave her family a certain feeling of ease they didn't have in the U.S. When we see Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, all these stories of people being murdered just in their home, living in their home, and being murdered at the hands of police brutality, hearing about it creates trauma, she said. She also worried about her son, Tasadik, 14. Tasadik towers over loved ones in the way that lanky teenage boys often do. He's shy, but opens up around his younger sister, Tasalia, 11, and the family dog, Apollo. In America, being a black male with locks who's very tall for his age, he's treated like a threat, Bauer said. Americans face few obstacles to living in Ghana, with most people paying an annual residency fee. But Bauer said getting citizenship signified more than simply living in Ghana. I didn't need citizenship to tell me I'm African. Anywhere I go in the world and someone looks at me, I'm melanated, she said. But my ancestors who wanted to return and come back home, those ancestors who never made it back, she said, that passport for me is for them. Between 10 to 15 million people were forcibly taken from Africa to the Americas during the transatlantic slave trade, the majority from West and Central Africa. Ghana, then a British colony, known as the Gold Coast, was the main point of departure. As memorials to the slave trade become tourist designations across West Africa, painful reminders of its brutality are easily accessible. From Ghana to Senegal to Benin, one can visit variations of the Door of No Return, haunting doorways that open to the Atlantic Ocean, where slaves left Africa and their families for the last time. The joy that people feel in finding connections that were broken long ago is palpable. Videos of the recent citizenship ceremony show men and women of all ages waving Ghanaian flags and cheering. Dejha Gordon, D-I-J-H-A, 33, was one of them. I first visited Ghana in 2015. From then on, I knew this is a place that I wanted to be and a place where I wanted to show other diasporans, African Americans, that we have a place where we belong, she said. She moved from Brooklyn to Ghana in 2019 and opened a food truck, Dejha Vu's Jerk Hut, selling Jamaican food. Between bagging to-go orders and speaking to Black American tourist couples, she explained how she built the business from scratch. Gordon was giddy while recalling the moment she got citizenship. "It just feels good to have a connection to an African country as an African American, as a Black American, because back in America, we don't have anything to trace our roots to but Africa. To have that connection here, I feel like I've done something right," she said. Like Bowers, Gordon has a stream of people reaching out and asking about the citizenship process. The path is not clearly defined. Citizenship must come from a concession from Ghanaian's presidency, a process made legal under the 2000 Citizenship Act. It's granted to those residing in Ghana who have told the Office of Diaspora Affairs that they are interested in citizenship. Ghana's government, in part, describes the program as a benefit to the economy and focuses on investment opportunities to those wishing to relocate. Festus Owosun, O-W-O-O-S-O-N, with the local nonprofit Migration Advocacy Center, said that though the government emphasizes the economic angle, the real benefits of citizenship are intangible. "I don't think the recipients were crying because they have landed a gold mine or they have found oil or some kind of business opportunity. But it's something so relieving, which you cannot put value or a price on," he said. President Nana Akufo-Addo's, NANAAKUFOADDO administration, which launched the Year of the Return, is on its way out. Ghana's main opposition party won the presidential election on December 7th. But Owosun said Black Americans and other diaspora citizens are likely to continue receiving citizenship by presidential concession. Citizenship can also pass to the next generation. The children of Bowers and Smith received it automatically after their parents' ceremony. Bowers' father, like her husband and children, was a follower of the Rastafari faith. Part of the Rastafarian tradition is to repatriate. "We see repatriation as the ultimate experience that you can have on this earth," she said. She believes that her father is proud of her. "I really feel like he's smiling where he is. He wanted to experience this for himself. So he's experiencing it through me." This article was titled, "Come Home, Ghana Told the African Diaspora. Now Some Black Americans Take Its Citizenship," written by the Associated Press, The Griot, January 4th, 2025. Next, an article from Anscape titled, "Locks Illustrate the Stories of Black Players' Lives on and off the court," written by Mia Berry, May 1st, 2025. As a child, New York Liberty forward Jonquel Jones would spend Saturday afternoons at a hair salon in her native Bahamas, waiting several hours for her hairstylist sister, Naya, to squeeze her in between appointments and style her hair. Jones, who describes her natural hair type as 4C, a thick and coily texture, initially wore a perm, but when she was playing sports, constant sweating and tight ponytails made her hair prone to breakage. Though her sister would tell her, "Beauty is a pain, suck it up," Jones began to believe locks, a style where curly and coily natural hair is twisted or interlocked with a tool to make rope-like strands, ultimately would be healthier for her hair. After pleading with her mother, Jones finally got permission to make the change in 2008 when she was in seventh grade. Now, nearly two decades later, Jones's hair has grown to waist length and she is one of the dozens of WNBA players with locks. While their hair textures and lengths may vary for many black female basketball players who wear the style, locks are a labor of love that illustrates their personal stories in basketball and life. When Jones first decided to lock her hair, she said her loctician, a hairstylist who specializes in maintaining locks, provided support and encouragement. She was like, "Oh my God, you've got the perfect hair texture for locks. Like, your hair holds in moisture, and it absorbs moisture. Your hair is going to look so good," Jones told Anscape. "And I feel like she really spoke a lot of life, love, and light into my hair as she was starting my locks and gave me a good foundation." Locking her hair taught Jones to go with her gut feeling, even if it rubs against the status quo, she said. Despite their initial hesitancy, everyone in Jones's immediate family now loves her locks and tells her they can't imagine her with a different hairstyle. "Just like everything that we do in the black community, we take things that people consider to be things that should be thrown away or things that are considered low, and we turn and flip it," she said. "We make it creative. We make it cool, and we make other people want to get on it." She's intentional about which products locticians use in her hair during retwists and moisturizes her locks with argan oil, Moroccan oil, and tea tree oil. At night, she wears a bonnet to protect her hair from lint, and when the Liberty won the franchise's first WNBA championship last season, Jones celebrated in the locker room while wearing a shower cap to protect her hair from the champagne showers. Jones is proud of her Bahamian heritage, and her locks have additional cultural meaning for her. "Locks are just so black," she said. "It's us as black people. It's self-expression. It also allows our natural hair to thrive. People's hair naturally grows when it's locked, because it's just the right type of style for the type of hair that we have, and it complements us so well." Nneka Ogwumike, Nneka Ogwumike. Seattle Storm forward Nneka Ogwumike identifies with rapper Lil Wayne, a Milli lyric, "tougher than Nigerian hair," describing her natural hair as a thicker type than 4C. The Nigerian-American first thought about changing her hair after playing overseas and not having a beautician to do her hair. She began her lock journey by growing out her natural hair for 2 years in protective styles like braids while researching the various sizes and parting shapes for locks. "I started looking into locks because I was like, I would really love for my hair just to be my hair on my head," Ogwumike said. "I just started having this idea around, I refuse to believe that our black women's hair can't grow long. I saw it all the time with people with locks." She decided to lock her hair in 2018, using the size and part structure of her box braids as a blueprint. She faithfully gets her hair retwisted every month, sometimes twice a month, depending on her schedule. Her cardinal rule for maintaining her locks is that when she's home, her locks aren't out. She wears a lock sock, satin covering that protects her hair. Her daily hair routine includes some spritz hairspray for her edges and her own special blend of scalp oil, which includes carrier oil, almond oil, rosemary, and lavender. Ogwumike now sports 131 individual locks that extend past her shoulder and offer her multiple options for different hairstyles. The budding stage, the early stage of locks, where the hair is forming knots and the strands won't easily unravel, taught her important lessons. Let your hair breathe, fall in love with your face, and have patience. Her locks reflect her intentional approach to life, she said. "I appreciate things as they are, and I understand that great things take time, because we live in this culture of like grind and instant return. And I feel like people who want a quick fix probably don't have locks," Ogwumike said. "I just really love the natural essence of locks. But I want my locks to tell the story of versatility. You know, we Black women don't just have to be one thing, and the things that make us who we are intricate. This upcoming WNBA season, 11 of the 13 WNBA members will have at least one player with locks on the roster. Ogwumike remembers when she was growing up, the most prominent Black women wearing locks were singers Lauryn Hill and India Arie. She's thrilled WNBA players can now offer more mainstream hair representation for young Black girls. I think young women are settling into the versatility of their hair, Ogwumike said. That is interesting because our hair has been weaponized and it's been political for so long. For the most part, we had to cover it or we had to assimilate. There was a negative connotation in getting extensions or weave because it was viewed as you're trying to fit in. It projected the limitations that society puts on how we can do our hair. Our hair is everything. Locks are one of those everything. It's not just hair, it's expression, history, culture, and it's legacy in so many different ways. And for people to recognize the beauty of it, I think is something that I really do appreciate. Madison Scott. Newly drafted Dallas Wings guard Madison Scott is following in the footsteps of her mother, father, and various other family members who wear locks. The Maryland native decided to lock her hair in the seventh grade, when she started taking basketball more seriously. For Scott, having locks has allowed her to focus on perfecting her skills. No other hairstyle would work for her. Every ounce of passion that I exhibit on the court, you can honestly see in my locks. The length, too, symbolizes growth, Scott said. I'm a work in progress. I'm doing everything I can to be the best person I can be and grow each and every day. Her locks visualize my life over time, Scott said, and the process of getting them to their current length parallels her growth during her basketball career. I didn't start off this long. I'm not always going to start at the top. I'm going to start where I am, she said. But if I keep working and going after everything I put my mind to, you see the finished product. In the decade she's had her locks, Scott has only had 4 locticians do her hair. She's also adamant on allowing at least 8 weeks in between getting her hair retwisted because she wants her hair to wolf, allowing her natural hair to grow out long and thick before locking it. She also does a detox with her hair every few weeks to wash out product buildup and sweat from practices. In between styles, Scott uses organic products such as coconut and tea tree oils on her locks to enhance their shine and reduce breakage. Scott, who is very interested in fashion, said she's had to learn how to work her locks into her overall look during rough patches when she's in between hairstyles, layering her edges and using hats as accessories. I tell people all the time, dreads are not for everybody. And the reason why I say this is because you go through those rough patches and then those good patches. Everybody can't deal with the roughness and the new growth and all that, Scott said. I just find a way to go with the roughness because I'm different and my style is different. Sometimes the roughness goes with the look I'm going with. Jeloni Cambridge, J-A-L-O-N-I. Ohio State guard Jeloni Cambridge's only rule when it comes to her hair is that her mother, Stephanie, is the only person allowed to do it. Cambridge's mother is a hairstylist who specializes in coloring and doing natural, textured black hair. After Cambridge decided to transfer to Montverde Academy, a Florida high school hundreds of miles away from her hometown in Nashville, Tennessee, she and her mother decided together that Cambridge would get locks in November 2022 to maintain her natural hair while she was away. During the past season, Cambridge's mother traveled to Columbus, Ohio for Ohio State's home games to help her daughter, who earned Big Ten Freshman of the Year honors, style her hair and give her fresh retwists. The mother-daughter duo also has experimented with color, with the student athlete sporting purple, blue, green, and blonde tips at the end of her locks. She and her mom spend time strategizing about various hair colors to try. And if Cambridge doesn't like the color, they change it immediately. Watching her mother wear color in her hair most of her life motivated Cambridge to do the same. It just inspired me to just do what she's doing. Who doesn't want to look up to their own mother, she said. I trusted my mom because she was the hairstylist and she knows what she was doing. Cambridge's daily hair routine includes oiling her scalp and putting her locks in a ponytail for basketball practice. And at night, she sleeps on satin pillowcases and wears a do-rag and bonnet. Currently, her locks are at shoulder length, and her go-to hairstyle is half up, half down. Watching her locks grow has made Cambridge fall in love with her hair. She's eager to see its growth after each style, but tries to wait before taking her hair down. I've been wanting a ponytail for so long, and I finally got it. Now we're just working on the high ponytail. But I got the back ponytail, so we're almost there, Cambridge said. There were stages where I didn't want my hair to be shown. I just needed patience and growth. And I think this just signifies who I am as a person. Simone Augustus. A lion without a mane is how LSU assistant women's basketball coach Simone Augustus, S-E-I-M-O-N-E, describes herself before she decided to forego her Allen Iverson-inspired cornrows in favor of locks while she was a player at the university. Long before Augustus and Rebecca Brunson led the Minnesota Lynx to four WNBA championships, 2011, 2013, 2015, and 2017, Augustus recalls being mesmerized by Brunson's locks at a Team USA practice back when they were both in college, players in the early 2000s. 6 games into the 2009 WNBA season, Augusta suffered her first major career injury, tearing her ACL. Knowing that she was going to have a long recovery road ahead of her, she decided to cut off her original signature locks and restart them. I just need something new. I'm from Louisiana, so I gotta get that juju off of me. Most people change their hair or change their body or whatever it is. When they change it, it means they're transitioning into something else, Augusta said. I wanted to show that I was more focused on coming back and being better. This article was an excerpt from Anscape titled, Locks Illustrate the Stories of Black Players' Lives On and Off the Court by Mia Berry, May 1st, 2025. That's all the time we have for the African American Hour. My name is Rosemarie Onkwe. Thanks for joining me.